Hey everybody, we're back with the next edition of the Hog Slobber podcast with me, Doc Harper, and as always, Chris Bond from ArkansasSports360.com and the Pop-Tart King of the Ozarks.
Hey man, glad to join you. Addiction. It's all the same. I mean, it's football season. It's a huge addiction for most.
I'm so excited. I'm getting all my words mumbled, jumbled, and all that.
Like you said, Pop-Tarts, man. What could be more exciting than Razorback Pop-Tarts?
You know, you go through the entire off season just hoping that some sort of news breaks that people will care about and will be into, and a lot of times there's nothing. This has been kind of an unusual off season with everything that's happened, obviously, but this whole Pop-Tart thing just kind of fell into our laps, and it's crazy. People, it's been a week now and people are still talking about it. I see people talking to Jeff Long on Twitter about it, trying to figure out where they can get it.
It's wild. I expected a few people to be interested. I didn't expect the next day to be at Walmart, you know, the day after it was announced, to be in Walmart and people, you know, combing the aisles looking for Pop-Tarts. And I didn't expect Pop-Tarts to be our number three most read post for last week. It's ridiculous, but I do have an update. Okay. I have a source who let me get the box, and he also let me take a package home, and so I was able to confirm that they are in fact delicious. In the toaster, the Razorback logo does not melt off.
It does not melt off.
Pretty excited. Okay. The only thing I can't tell you whether or not they're suitable for framing, which I suspect someone is going to try to do. I mean, you know, someone's going to try to get it, you know, treated with something so that they can just keep it forever. Formaldehyde, maybe? Would that work?
Maybe. I was thinking you could do like an airtight wrapping, like in some sort of plastic.
Like back seal it,
yeah, something like that, something where there's like no air getting into it, and yeah, that way you could, you know, put it on your wall, put it in one of those shadow boxes.
I promise you there is someone in McGee or Blyville right now who is trying to figure out how they can frame it forever.
McGee or Blyville. Those two places.
Well, I mean, it could be anywhere, but
Bond hates McGee. Bond hates Blyville. That's going to be the next thing.
Some of my favorite people are from McGee and from Blyville.
We talked last week about stadium atmosphere and everything, and I wanted to tell you I've come up with a song that I think is perfect, and I'm very excited about it. Let me run down the list of qualifications for it for you. It's a song that is really, really cool, and it's a song that most people don't really think about a whole lot, but whenever you bring it up, like, oh man, that song's awesome. Right? It's old enough that it won't just be the really young kids in the crowd who like it. You're not going to have something that like everybody who's, you know, 80 years old on down is going to like, probably, but this one's old enough, I think, that it'll reach to a really wide range of people. What do you call it? Got crossover appeal, racially. Okay. There's a lot of energy in it, and I think this is just perfect. And I even did a Google search to see if there was another school that was known for using it, like how Virginia Tech uses Sandman, but I couldn't find anything, so I think we could really hit a home run with this, and you can tell me what you think.
Is it Rick Ross?
No.
Lil Wayne?
No.
Okay.
Sabotage.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't that be perfect?
Yeah, I could see that.
I think if that song came out today, it would be a hit.
Yeah, that's a great... Yeah, that gets people pumped up. It's got a really funny video, too, which is probably why... I mean, that's probably what a lot of people know it for, is that video. And if you've never seen the video, you should Google it. But I could definitely see that getting the crowd going.
Well, when they make me in charge of all that stuff, I'll include it. All right, but now it's game week. Can you feel it?
Yeah, I can't feel it. And yeah, it's game week. I'm really excited. You know, even though it's you know, it's a sort of opponent you would expect for an opening week opponent. You know, it's not often for Arkansas you get a matchup like, you know, Alabama and Michigan open the season.
Mm-hmm.
Or Vanderbilt and South Carolina open with each other on Thursday before the first weekend of the season. So, I mean, you know, even though it's Jacksonville State, that's not super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's football season, you finally get to see what this team looks like with its new coach and retooled coaching staff is pretty cool.
It's a game. It's an actual game. It's not a scrimmage. It's an actual game. We're going to hit people we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully have a lot of fun. But even though it is like a game that, I mean, theoretically, you know, it's not a major game. It's probably not one that we're going to remember a whole lot of after the year's over. But there are always things that coaches are going to be looking for, fans are going to be looking for. What do you think the coaches will be looking for in particular? What are the storylines you think that people will follow?
Well, I think number one is, well, gosh, I don't know. I thought I was going to have number one, and then I had about 10 things pop into my head. I think naturally coaches and fans all want to see Niall Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a closed scrimmage, and Niall got some carries against live tackling. I'm told it was mostly like third stringers was the defense that he went against. So I think people are interested to see how he does in a real game, carrying the football, getting hit. This will be the first time carries in a game since the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
It's mind-blowing. So I think a lot of people are ready to see that. Sticking with the offensive side, I mean, I think obviously people are really curious to see how does Paul Petrino work the offense. Can he call plays and make the adjustments that, you know, people got so used to his brother making? It was interesting, though, because he got asked a couple days ago about, you know, wanting to put his stamp on the offense, and he kind of talked around that question and said he just wants them to put up a lot of points and a lot of numbers and
mm-hmm.
be the best they can be and all that kind of stuff. So really, really cliche, but it will be interesting. He will put his stamp on the offense, so it will be interesting
right.
to see what exactly that is. You know, and does the defense, I mean, we all saw the defense look so much better in the Cotton Bowl. Was that Kansas State? Was that the Paul Haynes, Tabor Johnson influence? And so, you know, I'm anxious to see kind of how that looks going forward.
I saw today that in a game, Jacksonville State played Kentucky last year, and Kentucky was really bad last year, but the Wildcats still ran up almost 400 yards on the ground, and compared to like less than 300 over the next four games combined. Assuming that's true, I just saw it on Twitter, but so do you think that Niall Davis, how much do you think he'll actually play against Jacksonville State? I mean, he could theoretically go for a huge game like that if their defense hasn't gotten any better. But it seems like also if they're way in the lead, you know, they might just want to go ahead and bench him. They've obviously been really cautious with him so far.
Right. I would be, and feel free to correct me in a week when I wind up looking. I would think anything over 12 carries for Niall in this first game is, you know, more than enough. So, but I can still see him going for, you know, 120 yards on 12 carries or something like that. He's looked we've talked about this before, I think on the podcast and then just like at lunch, but he has looked faster than he's ever looked before. And obviously physically he's in great shape. So I expect him to come out and have a huge game, but do it on very limited carries. And I could see him, you know, having a couple touchdowns. So, yeah. And then, you know, I think you'll also see Dennis Johnson and Ronnie Wingo get in the mix, because I think it's critical that you kind of build their confidence and get them running well, because even if Niall,
mm-hmm. especially with Wingo,
yes, especially with him. And I, you know what, I talked to him again the other night after practice. I really like that kid, and physically he has all the tools. It's just, you know, you hope maybe it all comes together for, and he hasn't been bad.
Right, yeah. He's been productive in most of his roles. He hasn't been very successful running up the middle, it seems like, but you get him around the outside, and he seems like he's done really well.
And you know, I mean, he hasn't put up that 1,000-yard season yet, but he's definitely got the tools. So I have a big year. So I get him going against a team like Jacksonville State for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you think – I'm going back to Nile, do you think that he's there – if he only goes to like 12 carries in the Jacksonville State game, do you think that at any point he's really going to see full extensive contact before the Alabama game?
Well, I mean, define like full out extensive contact.
I mean, facing the Razorbacks first teamers in practice, or maybe in the Louisiana Monroe game, bumping it up to 25 carries.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see his workload getting bumped up between Jacksonville State and Louisiana Monroe. But there's no way. I mean, even if he goes against first-team Arkansas defense, and no disrespect, you know. Well, I mean, it is kind of disrespectful, but I hope even if he got extensive carries against Arkansas defense in practice, the first-teamers, it's not going to be like what he will see on September the 15th against Alabama.
Right.
So I build him up incrementally. You get him, you know, 10, 12 carries against Jacksonville State. You get him a few more, you know, against Louisiana Monroe, which I would assume would be a better defense. And ultimately, I just think it's important to have him fresh. I think that's one benefit, you know, to him. And there will probably be some rust, but I think there's a benefit to him not getting hit all throughout fall camp. And you know, maybe getting limited work against those first two opponents is I think he'll be fresh. And you're talking about a defense that will have already, you know, gone up against against Michigan, so there'll be some probably more wear and tear and more mileage on them than, you know, Arkansas have going into that game. Now maybe that works in Bama's.
They've opened against really highly rated teams the last few years. I think last year they opened. Well, they didn't open against one, but they did play Penn State in week two, and then the year before that they played Virginia Tech, I think. So that seems to be their standard operating procedure.
They usually open up with a much bigger test. So, you know, I mean, you can argue that either way. I mean, it prepares them better for Arkansas than Arkansas's prepared for them. Or, you know, I'll take the optimist view and say maybe they'll be a little banged up coming in and a fresh Nile Davis. We'll do what he should have been able to do in 2010. When for whatever reason, he only got 6 carries in that game. But I was just surprised to go back and look at that and think about how little he was used in the first half of 2010.
Right.
I think you'll see that this year. I mean, I think once you get out of these first two games, I think you'll start seeing him carry a lot of the load. Yeah, I think this is an interesting question, and I'll be curious to get your take on it just from – I mean, I know you popped out to practice here and there, and you know, obviously pretty closely and followed pretty closely, but Tally on Twitter, D_Tally, wants to know who the team's second leading receiver is going to be.
If you count him as a receiver, I would say Chris Gregg.
I would agree. I would tend to agree with you on that. I think it'll be Kobe and Gregg. What if we don't count him?
I'm leaning kind of towards Brandon Mitchell, actually. Or maybe one of the freshmen. I've heard a lot about some of the freshmen. I haven't seen them that much, though. This particular, the Mikhail McKay kid, who I spent the entire Olympics confusing his name with Michaela Maroney, the gymnast. And I'm still trying to work my way through that.
For 2 years... Chris Gregg, Greg Childs. It was Chris Childs and Greg Gregg.
but I've heard a lot about him. The Keon Hatcher, I've heard a lot of good things about him. So among the freshman group there, I think there seems to be a lot of talent there. That group with Julian Horton and Gervonta Herndon, I just haven't heard a lot about them, so I don't really know how much to expect from those guys. Have you seen much from them?
You know, they've been quiet. They've had their moments. You know, it's when you think back freshman year when they came in, this group of four receivers, they dubbed themselves the Fantastic Four, and it was Gervonta Herndon, Julian Horton, Marquell Wade, and and obviously two of those guys are no longer with the program. But Horton and Herndon have, you know, they've shown flashes. But I have consistency out of them that you would hope, especially, you know, for guys that are in their third year with the program. So maybe this will be a breakout year for those two guys. But I think they're getting serious pushes from Mitchell and Hatcher and McKay. And it's going to be interesting. I'm going to go outside of the box. I'm going to say Ronnie Wingo will be the second.
Yeah, I thought about Ronnie. Especially in that wheel route. I love him in the wheel route where he just kind of slips behind the defense and picks up a quick 20, 25 yards. They seem to be able to pull that out once or twice not every game, but sometimes when they really need it, it always seems to be there.
I love that play. I hope we see more. They did it every game, like multiple times a game, then it would lose its effectiveness.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And it's so pretty to watch, too.
Yeah, it really is.
But speaking more of the freshmen, we mentioned some of the receivers, and I know that Jonnell Smith said the other day, he threw a few names out there, who he all expects to play, and assuming most of the other people will probably redshirt unless injuries happen or something like that. But who are some of the other freshmen that you're excited about seeing?
Otha Peters and Turner at linebacker. I think we'll see them. Hopefully not a whole lot at linebacker, but I suspect you'll get to see them on special teams.
That was Otha and who?
A.J. Turner.
Oh, okay. The kid from Arkansas. East Poinsett County, I think.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, Will Hines at corner. I have really loved what we've seen out of him in practice. He just pops. He just stands out. So I think Will Hines will get a chance to play. You know, Nate Holmes could help him in the return game. Jonathan Williams has looked really good at running back. I don't know how you break him into the rotation ahead of Ronnie and Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Ronnie starts to emerge more as a receiver and Dennis is, you know, your go-to guy on special teams. So maybe Williams can kind of fight his way into some carries. And then, you know, you'll probably see some of those young defensive ends get in the rotation. But it's a far cry from 2008 when they were having to play, you know, what, 16, 17?
Oh, gosh. I think it turned out to be like 20, didn't it?
That was brutal.
Yeah. I'm really excited about Otha. I thought when he committed like the day before signing day.
Yeah.
And that was the day before Doriel Green Beckham picked Missouri. And obviously all the attention was on DGB, but I really thought Otha, it was one of those message board threads, like if you could take a 5-star wide receiver or a little bit lower ranked linebacker, you know, who would you take? And almost everybody always said the linebacker, but we saw then that all the attention was on DGB, but I really think that Otha could be a lot bigger need for the Razorbacks than Beckham would have been, especially this year anyway.
Oh, no question. I mean, I think, I'll be honest with you, I mean, I think DGB would have been a great addition to this offense. I think he would have really thrived with Paul Petrino and catching passes from Tyler Wilson. But the need on this team is at linebacker, and at the time was at linebacker. And so I think, hey, if that's the straight-up swap that you made, Otha Peters for DGB, then I think Arkansas came out in really good shape for what it needs.
Right.
A lot of people, too, I think forget. Everybody talks about losing, you know, DGB to Missouri. Well, Arkansas wound up flipping two kids from Missouri. And one of them was Jonathan Williams, the running back, who will probably play this year. And then Will Hines at corner. And so if that, let's say that, those two for DGB, I still think Arkansas came out, you know, in a good spot. Don't get me wrong, DGB would have been great in this offense.
Mm-hmm.
For what Arkansas needed, you know, to get those two kids to flip for Missouri early on, and then to get Otha Peters there right before signing day. I think they filled needs, and I definitely think you'll see Otha Peters make plays this year.
Yeah, I do too. And they even gave him the number 5 jersey, which I know Tremaine Thomas had the last few years after McFadden, but do you think there's any significance to that at all, or just kind of random happening?
I don't know. I do know that if you get a number in the single digits, that typically means you're pretty good.
Generally, you'd like to hope.
Yeah, if you're wearing number 1 or 5 or something along those lines, then you're 3 or 4, as we've seen the last couple of years. So I don't know if there's any significance, but let's hope he plays defense like number 5 played offense a few years ago.
Yeah, definitely. But going back to Missouri, I've seen some reports that DGB has been tearing it up there in practice, but them and A&M, how well do you think they're going to do in the SEC their first year? There's been, you know, a lot of talk about, well, they're just not going to be prepared. They don't know the week-by-week grind that it's going to take to be successful here. Their linemen aren't quality enough to be able to handle the defensive lines in the SEC, that sort of thing. So what are you expecting out of them? Obviously, Arkansas doesn't play Missouri this year, unfortunately, but they do play A&M, and I think there's going to be a lot of talk from Arkansas fans and Missouri fans throughout the year, just because there seems to be a lot of animosity already built up between the two of them.
Missouri this year has the better chance to come in and make an impression. I think because they're in the East, I think that helps them. I think they'll have a little bit easier schedule to some degree, maybe, you know, easier than A&M. I think, you know, they're not going through a coaching change. They have, I mean, Pinkel has been there for, 10 years plus?
Ish.
Pinkel has been there. That staff, for the most part, has consistent. So I think there's some stability there. I do think they'll struggle because of their defensive and offensive lines, you know, not being the size that they need. I think Texas A&M is going to struggle initially. I think that offense, they're going to have to probably tweak it a little bit to make it work. And my gosh, A&M's in, you know, they're now in the division with Arkansas, LSU, Alabama, and I think they're going to have a rough go of it maybe initially.
I saw where they named, I think, a redshirt freshman as their quarterback this year. It's weird because Kevin Sumlin's, he made his name through that kind of air raid passing high-flying offense. So I think it's going to be real interesting to see if he's able to let his running backs run. The running backs, I think, are pretty clearly going to be the strength of their offense. But, you know, if that's not his natural persuasion, you know, who knows how that's going to really work out. I mean, Arkansas goes down to College Station. It's their first road game of the year. That's a game that some people have kind of circled as a potential trap game for the Razorbacks. I know that's a tough place to play. Everybody says that Kyle Field's one of the toughest home environments in the country. I don't doubt that. But I just have a hard time seeing it being as tough a game for the Razorbacks as it has been the last couple of years.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I guess I reserve the right to change my opinion on this after I've actually been to College Station this year.
Uh-huh.
Not imagine College Station being a more difficult environment to play or being even on par with Alabama or LSU, even Auburn. I just have a hard time. As good as that environment may be, I just have a hard time believing that Arkansas is somehow going to be overwhelmed.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Obviously, Arkansas is not going to be seeing anything they're not used to. I'm just saying what people have been saying. I've never seen a game there, but I do expect a good environment. It'll be their second home SEC game, I think. So hopefully they do put on a good show.
I hope. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just, the random laughter is me looking at my Twitter mentions periodically.
Okay.
You know, in the spirit of John L., you know, telling folks to get their piss hot, Sports Human has asked, what's the better way to warm it up, microwave or stovetop? I would say stovetop, probably.
I was going to go microwave.
Microwave gets it warmer quicker. I'm just not sure it's as thorough as the stovetop.
I would think you want, well, quickness versus thorough. That's the standard problem you have with microwaves versus baking or stovetops, right?
Right. I would think you would want to build up. I think you would want to start with, you know, room temperature, and then build your way up.
Okay, I'll defer to you on that.
Okay.
You can be our resident expert.
Oh, good. I've just walked into that. That's awesome.
He also asks, wiggling your fingers during the woo portion of the hog call, yes or no?
My limited experience just personally calling the hogs, I'll probably defer to you to this question. However, I think we can all agree the woo, the howl, is incorrect. It's just woo.
Yeah, I don't know how that got started, but everybody that I ever see online always hates it. I never see anybody who claims to do it other than when they actually show someone doing it on TV. But, yeah, that needs to go away. But the wiggling your fingers thing, yeah, you gotta do that. That's a must.
Oh, you do? You do have to wiggle your fingers?
I think so.
Oh, that just makes it so awkward.
No, it's not awkward.
No?
You don't even have to really wiggle just your fingers. You can kind of just move your whole arm. And it has a visual effect. It looks a lot better when there's movement. Otherwise, it just kind of looks like the wave.
And we all know where you stand on the wave.
Yeah, everybody hates the wave. And somehow the wave has just gotten associated with War Memorial, but it happens almost everywhere. And yeah, and everybody hates it. But the movement during the hog call, I think, is very important. It creates a better visual.
I mean, if you can move, if you can have without it looking like jazz hands, then I'm all for it. But
and you don't have to move them like super fast. You can even just kind of do a little mild wave.
All right.
If that makes any sense.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Go around the SEC a little bit. Are there any storylines going into the first week that you're going to be paying attention to?
Because it's the first game of the year and I'm just starving for football, but I'm really curious to see how South Carolina goes down. And I don't know what I don't know which way you're going with South Carolina. I don't know what the line is, but I would not be stunned if Vanderbilt came away from that thing with a win.
I wouldn't be stunned either. I'm actually not going to probably put that in roulette because I'm planning roulette for Friday and that game's on Thursday night.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
But which I'm kind of glad about because I'm kind of scared of touching that game. But yeah, I think Andy has a really good chance of winning that game. And if they do, there's going to be a lot of talking about James Franklin in places that might be having a coach's opening after the season's over.
Yep.
And also going on that night is Texas A&M at Louisiana Tech, which that line started out as like an 11-point line, but it's already dropped down to 7. A lot of people are thinking A&M, because it's not in College Station, it's in Shreveport.
Yep.
And a lot of people have that circle as a possible upset.
That's going to be interesting to watch. I know Kevin Tomlin, I mean, you expect a head coach to do this, but he's really talking up Tech and saying, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but something along the lines of we don't expect that to be a gimme. This is a conference champion. I think Tech is I'll be watching that for sure. I don't know that Tech pulls the upset, but that'll definitely be worth keeping an eye on.
And I'm really excited for the Friday night games too. The big one to me is Tennessee and North Carolina State.
Yeah.
Because I think that's pretty clearly the most important game of Tennessee's season. I think if they lose that game, I'm going to pick against Tennessee every week the rest of the year. But if they win that game, and I kind of think they will, then I think they could end up having a really good year compared to, you know, where they've been the last few years.
Well, I like them to kind of be a surprise team in the East. Not to win the East, but to be competitive. Because, as much of a knucklehead as Tyler Bray is, I think he's a very talented quarterback. And then I thought he had some really good skill people around him. But Tennessee has booted DeRick Rogers. So he's gone, right?
Correct.
And so not that one guy makes a team, but I think when you're booting a star player this close to the opening of the season, and you've got those kind of issues, and he was kind of the focal point of the offense, I'm beginning to wonder if maybe Tennessee won't be the Tennessee we've come to know the last few years. I'm as I was initially.
I think a lot of people had to question it after Rogers got dismissed. I don't know. I still think they'll be a halfway decent team. I think they'll be bowl eligible this year. I don't know what exactly their limits are for Derek Dooley keeping his job, but I think that's going to be a really interesting team to watch this year. But I do think if they do lose to North Carolina State, then it's just going to go straight downhill. That's kind of been their MO the last few years. When things do start going bad, they tend to just bottom out. That's the game I'm going to be keeping my eye on for sure.
They need a very strong start.
And then on Saturday, of course, there's not really a whole lot of huge games. I think it's just Alabama and Michigan and Auburn and Clemson.
Yeah, that's Alabama, Michigan. I think a lot of people are starting to wonder if Alabama can win that game. Will they be able to stop, what's his name, Shoelace?
Denard Robinson.
Until I see someone beat Bama, particularly someone from another conference, I just have a hard time. Steps up and knocks them off, then I'll kind of reconfigure what I think about Bama. But I expect Bama to win pretty big in that one. And then I think Clemson could potentially roll over Auburn.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I think about it. I think Alabama, Denard Robinson hadn't been an effective passing quarterback. Right. And if they can, he'll have to prove he can throw the ball to beat Alabama. And even if he can, it's still going to be really, really, really tough.
Cannot be one-dimensional against them. And I'll tell you one game Saturday, and of course you're going to roll your eyes at me, that I think will be entertaining. And I said nothing about being close. I think Arkansas State at Oregon, I think, will be entertaining to watch. I think that'll be an exciting way to wind down the first the first Saturday of the season.
What's the over under on that game? Do you know?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but it's got to be. I would think, and I expect there'll be a lot of points put up. I don't think ASU has any sort of depth to where they can compete with Oregon. But I think it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, if it's anything under 70, I'm going over for sure. Probably under 80, and I'll still go with the over. There could be like 200 plays run in that game.
Yeah, it's gonna be ridiculous. So, and it's like a 9:30 kick here. So
I know. I'm very excited about that part of it, because I'll actually get to hopefully watch some of it after the Arkansas game.
Yeah, that'll be good. I'm trying to think, what else do we need to hit on?
I think that pretty much covers it for the first week. There aren't like a ton of huge games. There's a lot of big games the second week. So we'll talk more about that next week.
Definitely. One thing I meant to touch on earlier, just with the it's kind of what we're watching for. I know we talked about Paul Petrino's stamp on the offense, but I'd probably just reiterate, if I did mention it before, and if I didn't, I should have. Just, what Paul Haynes does and how this retooled defense looks. I'm more interested in that than anything else going in.
Yeah, I think everybody's definitely going to be paying a lot of attention to the defense. It'd be cool if they could get a shutout.
It would be. They got, they got, I guess, relatively close last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave up, a late touchdown against one of the cupcake teams.
I think it was a New Mexico game. I could be wrong about that.
It's been way too long since they've done that, so.
And I know that was a goal of theirs last year, to get the shutout, but hopefully they can pull that out this year. I think it'd be a really nice way to set the tone for the year.
No question. I mean, that, we talked about some of the players that need big games starting out, but the defense, if they could make that happen, that would be that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, all right, Chris. Well, thanks again for coming on, and we'll get you off of here so we can go watch Breaking Bad here in a little bit.
Yeah, Breaking Bad, maybe a little Big Brother as well.
I'll leave that one for you. I'm not into, that's not my thing, but.
I wasn't either. And then I got hooked.
It's funny how that happens.
Yeah, that's one of those shows that for a couple years I would watch, and you know how this goes. Like, I think a lot of guys can relate. Maybe you're in the room when it's on, but you got the headphones on, you're reading, whatever, you're not really paying attention. And then little by little, it sucks you in. So, like, one headphone comes out, you pay attention, and then you put the magazine away, and the next thing you know, you're hooked on a reality game show.
Yeah, those things don't take much. That's part of their gimmick. Everything's a cliffhanger.
After this time next week, we'll be talking about an actual football game. It'll be great.
I know. It's hard to believe. I can't. It's one of those things I'll never really believe it's here until like Thursday when there's actually a game on TV, and then I'll be like super psyched for Saturday.
Yeah, I can't. I can't wait. It needs to get here though.
It's gonna be a long few days, I think. All right, man. Well, thanks again, and we'll do this again next week.
All right, sounds like a plan. Thanks.
Until next time. What could it be? It's over, run. You're scared.